Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
Well, greetings everybody. This is John Fisher. It's Tuesday night, May 13th. It is Blog Talk Radio time on The Catch, which is also a daily email that I write and we send out free to our audience 5 days a week. And you can sign up for free, and or you can become a member, which we got a big membership campaign going right now, which will entitle you to a bunch of other things and community events and things we're going to keep you informed about. So it's really kind of a cool thing we have starting here, and it's getting better and better every day. And we've got our regular team all together tonight. We have our favorite Gunnar Simonsen from Portland. He's our producer. Hi, Gunnar.
Rip City!
Woo! Go Blazers!
Hi, Gunnar.
And that's my wife, Marty.
Hello, everybody.
Yep, a lot of you probably know Marty by now. And she's a very important part of the Catch Ministry. And she's the one who makes me go. And so I won't get any more into that. But
That would be fine.
I want to be able to sleep tonight. So we are very excited tonight because we have a really special old friend, guest, person, wonderful songwriter, singer. Yeah, it's going to be good. But we always talk about a little bit of a current event before. And I don't know, Gunnar, can we talk about, we just started something new today.
Yeah.
What do we call it? What are we doing there?
We are talking about what everyone else is talking about. You know, there's so many stories that are breaking every day, and it's hard to keep up with it. And how do we navigate these things through the lens of the Catch and the gospel of welcome? And today, at catchjohnfisher.wordpress.com, we just posted a couple of videos. One of them, obviously, we're talking about the empowering women and the whole thing that's gone on in Nigeria.
Yep.
And of course, right now, finishing up 10. Was the Magic Johnson interview with Anderson Cooper about Donald Sterling. And so you had a couple of videos, didn't you, John?
I did. I did a couple of videos. I popped them out. It was great fun. And we're going to start doing this every day. And so if you catch how would they follow this if they wanted to see all these? You know, how could they do? Is there some way they could just maybe be notified maybe when I do one and we put it up?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're putting it everywhere. I mean, we want to go where anybody can see these videos, from YouTube to just, you know, they're going on the website. You can get the daily posts, you know, on the website. We've got Facebook. If you're on Facebook, definitely like our page, facebook.com/thecatch, Twitter @Fishback. So there's, you know, wherever people are, that's where we're pushing the videos. And so I'm sure we'll have something in the upcoming daily Catch email to give them more and more instruction.
Yeah, that's great. There's that thing that I never understood, but I heard it was called RSS. Isn't that when you get a direct feed?
John, you are so embarrassing. You know what that is. I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah.
am so embarrassed. I even know.
I know that was about 12 years. That was about 12 years ago. But at any rate, is it possible to get a direct feed or something like this?
Yeah, I mean, you can go on to the website, you know, and sign up, you know, through the WordPress the page there with the RSS. And I got to be honest with you guys, you're calling me out on how people can get stuff through RSS, and I'm sitting here trying to figure out why I'm talking to you in like this golden radio voice. What is that all about? Hi, John and Marty. I'm going to tell you about how your videos are being seen.
No, you're doing it because I think it's low and sexy.
I don't know what it is, but I don't know why I'm talking this way. But I don't have conversations like this on the phone with anybody. Hi, John. How are you? How can we put this together today?
I'm just fine, Gunner.
I think that's how anchormen and radio DJs, that's how they talk in real life. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like,
do you really
you know,
think
so? I'm John Fisher. In the news, and so, I have no idea. But the exciting thing is that we're going to try to chase some of these relevant stories that are breaking every single day, and give the listeners and the readers, you know, kind of that view of how can we navigate this. And John, you had some great videos today talking about what's going on in Nigeria, and as well as Magic Johnson's interview with Donald Sterling, and we're looking forward to that, John. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think this will be great, and I love reading the newspaper, and I'll just have a whole new purpose for it now. So we'll do it. You know, I used to
something besides baseball.
Yeah,
something besides baseball. Although the
depends.
Angels are beating the Phillies right now. I just got a little deal on my phone. Yeah,
yeah. And my Cardinals got beat 17-5 by the Cubs last night.
Ooh,
so.
That's not
good. That's humiliating.
John, why don't you tell them what you're going to do for your birthday next Saturday?
Well, I'm going with my family to a ball game.
Oh,
yeah,
and
you're
yeah,
well, unique.
And isn't that unique? And we're going to tailgate ahead of time, and it's Saturday, and we found out that they're actually going to put on a fireworks show for my birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And also, everybody, anybody that's there, be sure to be there during the third inning. Hint, hint, the third inning. You'll see a big surprise.
Third inning. And I gotta wonder, though, too, if you're at the game and the fireworks show comes on, I'm wondering if they're going to do it to this song.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I
love it. I think so. Too many people.
Hey,
it would be perfect.
So many people.
We've got
I love it. That's great.
Here. We've got new features here on The Catch tonight. We're playing music.
Hey, you know what?
Okay.
Dee Dee Rhodes, one of our bestest persons in the whole world, faithful people that have been with us for quite some time, she says, to you, Gunner, hello, and to you, John, love you a lot. And she is so excited about the fact that Pam Markle is, she is so excited about this. So,
oh, that's great. Dee Dee. That's right, Dee Dee?
Yeah, Dee Dee.
I remember. Yeah.
Hi, Dee.
Yeah,
yeah, hi, Dee Dee.
She's been, she's been a real real support and fan.
But of course, but of course.
Cool. For the longest time, that's
back,
great.
But of course.
Okay, well, since you did it, honey, you just spilled the beans.
Well, I'm so excited. I can't even believe that we have her on. I really do not believe it.
And then what I'll, you might, you know, we're still waiting on getting things worked out here with Pam on the line here. We having some issues here, but, you know, John, I'm sure there's plenty of things that you can say about Pam and going back. And so maybe just launch that plane.
Okay. Okay. Do you need Pam's number? Would that help?
No, it's good.
It's good. Cool. Very cool. Well,
we're just waiting.
Do we go back?
John, I will start with the fact that when I first met John, Pam Mark and John did a lot of music together, and they did a lot of concerts together. And when I was, Don Ritchie said, "Will the real fiance of John Fisher please stand up?" And no one knew it was going to be Pam or me. It's one or what. Oh. No one knew. That's how close you guys
were. And didn't you guys do the little one up and then the next one up and then the next one up until, I thought I remember that.
Always been on her side. She's an amazing woman. She's done so much over these years. I'm hoping, you know, I know you're going to want to talk about the 70s, but I'm hoping that she'll talk about the Paler Shade and all the tunes that are on that and what she's been doing when she was in Nashville. And now maybe even she'd be willing to talk a little bit about her cause-related marketing programs that integrate causes, business, and music. How cool is that? I mean, those are some very current today things that are happening. But, okay, you go back to the old John.
Yeah. So, I was going to, you know, and Pam will have to bring her perspective in on this, but I'm trying to remember when it was when we first met, that it was probably 1970. That's my guess. It might have even been four. But
she was considered one of the pioneers of the 70s.
Yeah. The first time I heard her voice, she sang a song, and when she was done, I made a really big mistake. I just said, "Will you marry me?" I think I did. I have to have her. I have to find out whether I really did say that or not, but I think I did. And it probably, messed our relationship up for the next 25 years. But, other than that.
She came out winner.
We've had a great relationship, and Pam was one of our first interns with Discovery Art Guild. She took the big leap and moved down to Palo Alto, and
which is a very funny thing to do.
Yeah, a very dangerous thing to do with a bunch of people who didn't know what they were doing, and just had a vision for training artists. And I think we did that, but our organization didn't really get off the ground. But we did. We did have three or four people during that time who I had a chance to, with a couple others and some of the other pastors, pour our lives into, and in some ways helped them get a career started. And of course, you know, we were all involved there in the very early stages of the Jesus movement, and doing the songs together. So. And I think because of that, people associate us together a lot, at least people who go back that far, back to the 70s. Mm-hmm.
Not just that, John. I mean, there's sort of a lot of people, but you guys did music together. I mean, you did make amazingly beautiful music together. Obviously, some that people know, like Joseph and Mary that Pam wrote, and other songs that you sang together did prepare to be no other pair.
Yeah, that continues to be an all-time favorite of many people. Every Christmas, I get emails and letters from people who want to get a hold of Joseph and Mary again. And Pam actually wrote that song, I think, for an assignment in a Bible study.
Have you? Really?
That I was teaching, and we each took. I think I took Joseph. And was going to do a week on Joseph, and she took Mary. And out of her study of Mary, she came into a Bible study and sang that song for us, which blew everybody away, if you can imagine.
Oh, my God, if anyone heard that, yes, it would. It would definitely do.
I think we need to find out from her. What do you think, guys?
Yeah. Oh, good. We'd love to hear her voice.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Drum roll, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
Joseph, oh Joseph, I've loved no other man.
And
there you go.
And, hi.
Welcome.
Hello.
Pam. Yeah. And where are you calling us from?
Well, I'm calling you from Roseville, California.
You know, and I talked to you there today, and I, for the life of me, if someone asked me where Roseville is, I don't think I would know.
It's right next to RSF.
RSF.
Very good. Good job.
It's right next to
the
RSF button.
She is on top of it. Just figuring out. What does he mean? What does she mean?
It is northeast of Sacramento. It's okay, John.
Okay.
There is a glossary of terms that you can download.
Okay. Okay.
RSF. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
He just lost a little step right. But only
I'm just so glad. I'm so glad you are with us. Pam, when did we meet? Do you remember? What was it, 70? Maybe? You think?
When? I'm sorry, what'd you say?
What year? Was it 1970? Did we meet?
I believe 70, so. 70? I believe it was 70, 71, yeah.
Yeah.
And was at that? Yeah, you did. You did hear me sing and ask me to marry you, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I thought I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Well,
that
was just a way of saying that I was totally blown away the first time I heard you, as I always am, every time I've heard you since.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And, Marty, I'm glad that you were the last woman standing tonight at PBC.
You know what?
Yeah.
Every reason under the sun, my love, to believe that you're glad that I'm the last one at you.
No, I'm glad it was you.
I know, and you're glad. I'm telling you. Many years later, you should be very, very glad. There's a woman on the line we've been talking about. Her name is Dee Dee Rose. You know her. She was writing me right now in the chat room, telling me that she is a major fan of yours, but her first Christian record that she ever heard in her entire life was yours, and the song was This Is Not a Dream. Do you remember that song? 1977, I think. Right?
What about the song? Yeah, This Is Not a Dream. Yeah, the album. Yeah,
yep.
And our mutual friend Jim Lamb did the artwork on it, and it was amazing because it was an angel, you know, in Narnian gear, you know, protecting me climbing over rocks. It was pretty amazing.
I remember that cover. And that, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say hi to Dee Dee. I really appreciate every time I see you on my Facebook. Just know that I know you're there, and I really, really appreciate you being in this world and making a difference.
Right.
Cool.
Way to go.
That's beautiful. What album was that? What number? Pam, This Is Not a Dream. Was that third?
That was the second one.
Second. Okay.
The first one was Flying.
Flying.
What was your favorite?
I know.
What was your favorite tune on that one?
On which one? On This Is Not a Dream?
Yes.
I think my favorite song on This Is Not a Dream is Not My Will.
Oh, my God. That's one.
It's about Jesus being in the garden and having this conversation with the Father, and he's agonizing over what he's about to face and the torment and not so much of the physical pain but of the spiritual pain of taking on all of the darkness of the world upon himself and knowing that that had to be judged. And so that was another one, John, I think that came out of one of your Bible studies.
Mm.
And, you know the songs that you know are the lasting ones, they just kind of fall out of the sky. I'm pretty sure it was like that.
Yeah.
Where I just started playing and started singing and there it was. And then Clark Gassman did an amazing job with the string arrangements.
Cool.
Say a little bit about Clark, will you, John, because I'd like to honor his memory.
Clark has just had a major contribution to both of our music. I met Clark, and actually at what would have been 1970. It was the first time I met him, and a guy named Walt Hera. Some people might even know Walt.
Yeah.
He had heard my first album, Cold Cathedral, which I did in Chicago, and with the Old Town School of Folk Music. He says, you need to get an arranger. You need LA studio musicians. You need to put it, you know, we need to do this upright. And
right.
he connected me with Clark.
Oh.
And that's how that all started. He arranged Have You Seen Jesus My Lord? He arranged that whole album.
Oh, and you did? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he got the musicians. And, oh, remember we had a, can't even remember his name now, but and we had the same guy on one of the songs that played the piano on Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
Oh, really? Larry
yeah.
Nixle?
Larry Nixle, that's right.
Go ahead.
We had some guy doing, we had somebody else really special doing the pedal steel, the same one that played on Judy Collins' album, Who Knows Where the Time Goes, which is my favorite, absolute favorite, all-time album of anybody.
So, it wasn't Al Perkins, was it?
No, I don't remember. Yeah, no, it wasn't Al Perkins, no.
Okay.
I'd have to look that one up.
Yep.
And these names I've forgotten now. But so Clark, and then Clark was in for the next, probably New Covenant. Then Naphtali was the one we did a couple songs together. That's where we did Mary and Joseph.
Right.
That Clark arranged. Clark arranged that. And Inside.
He was an incredible interpreter.
Yeah, he was all the way to Johnny's Cafe. Yeah, in fact, On Johnny's Cafe, he made two versions of every song. One which was the way I wrote it, and one to upgrade it because Light wanted to upgrade me.
Well, that was awfully nice of them.
But he was too reluctant to change the song, of course. Of course, I went for the upgrade every time because it sounded so cool.
What do you mean by upgrade?
Kind of upgrade the sound, you know.
Little
brass and little pull
away
from John Fisher, you know.
Okay.
So yeah. Johnny's Cafe sounds like Billy Joel and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, you had a good time then.
Yeah. No, I wasn't.
And Keith, was Keith Olsen, did he... Did Keith Olsen engineer all of those, or was it? I want people to know that the engineer who engineered Naphtali, Marion Joseph, was also the guy who produced Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie
yeah.
Nicks when they're.
Yeah.
And then he went on to do Fleetwood Mac's first couple of records,
yeah.
I think.
He did. He did. They're really big records. They're really big records. Yeah. He's a genius.
That was big time for me.
So,
it was.
Oh gosh, what was it like, Pam? How was it different then? What were we doing? Do you remember what it was like?
Well, there are so many ways to answer that question.
I know. So just pick one. Pick one.
Okay. I mean. I, John, I'm not sure that we've ever talked about this before, but, I mean, since I was a little girl, that's all I dreamt about was there were two things that I wanted to do, and one was music. I mean, I started doing music when I was five, you know, tap dancing and singing and piano and then guitar, and I started writing
yeah.
songs when I was nine. So music was the primary driver. The secondary driver was that I wanted to change the world. I wanted to make an impact on the world around me. And
wow.
I thought I was so special, but, you know, apparently it was a sign of the times in our generation, you know, that we weren't just going to be a generation to come and go, but we, for some reason, we really looked at things, analyzed things, and it's probably because we didn't have to worry about money because our parents were making a little more than their parents were making. So
mm-hmm.
they wanted the best for us. So we had the privilege, to take piano lessons or guitar lessons or whatever. So so what's different? For me, the music emerged out of my life and the times and my goals and my dreams and then my spiritual life, really blossomed in my college years. And then being at PBC, of course, it's years later you look in retrospect, but having the opportunity to sit under the teaching of Ray Steadman, Ron Ritchie, Dave Roper, John Fisher, Jack Crabtree, I can't remember all of them, but that was a time when we really engaged intellectually with our faith as well as aesthetically. And I think we were really attempting to live a holistic life of faith and on music. And it all emerged. It was like, I guess it's called the tipping point, right?
Yeah.
That happened in our culture. And I don't know. Well, we've got a whole lot to talk about. But I think the whole thing is imploded. And there needs to, I think that the spiritual culture, the religious culture is in a way back where it was when the standard churches, the mainline churches, you know, we were rebelling against tradition. And now that rebellion has become the tradition, and there needs to be a whole new revolution of thought and questioning.
Well said.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I've got a whole lot more on that.
Keep going, keep going. No, I didn't mean, I just wanted to say that. And keep going. This is great.
Well, okay.
I think I interrupted your
flow
of thought.
That's
I interrupted your flow of thought that you got us into a spot of a new, we need a new revolution.
Okay. I need to back up a little bit, personally, because, and interject my own personal story into the situation rather than just pontificating. Is that all right?
Please.
I have so much to say, I don't even know where to start. So ask me questions.
Well, I'm feeling something that I think you're feeling is that what you outlined there in the beginning was almost ideal. It was like, you know, we have to be careful that we don't go back there and just want to stay there because but there was something unique about that time, about the freedom that we had, for one, freedom from a lot of the constraints that are on us as older people and adults and fathers and mothers and wives and husbands and all that. You know, freedom to study, like you say, and to be creative. And I think what was unique about it was that it hadn't been done. We were creating a new genre. And so when you're doing that, it's totally wide open. It's like now when you create something, someone wants to know, well, where is that going to fit? Where does that
right.
go? Does that go over here or over there? Do we label that what, you know? There's always something to put everything because we've already thought of it all.
But we really haven't in the sense that I got to tell you something. Somebody told me, and I'm glad I can't remember who told me, but they were telling me one of the major Christian record labels that this young woman, 26 years old, amazingly talented, wanted to get a record deal with them. And they turned her down because she was too old. 26. Too old. So I think that, I mean, this all ties in with one of the main things that I wanted to talk about. There are two main things I want to talk about. One is community. Good. And the other is about being a baby boomer, being, you know, has been Jesus music, Jesus free. You know, boomers living the last third of their lives. What generation were we? The me generation? Is that what we were? Is that what we are, the me generation?
Well, we turned into that, I think.
Yeah. So I need to interject my story here because, you know, coming out of that fertile ground of social revolution, spiritual revolution, cultural revolution, I know I thought that I had found what I was going to be doing the rest of my life, and that was writing songs from the core of my being, telling my story, which included my relationship with God, the scriptures, and with a community of faith. And I just took it for granted that that's what I would be doing. And then life hits. And life hits, you have the mortgage, you have the unhappy marriage, and I'm not going to go into any details, but my marriage tanked. And I knew, I mean, I held on for as long as I could because I knew the nature of the gatekeepers of, because, as you know, Christian music, the only way it was distributed was through the Bible bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we, Jesus people, you know, our lives are being evaluated, not just our music, but now we're not just coming from this new place of freedom. I mean, we've done our sophomore records. Mm. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of, man, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to those first two records, and I think, that's really sweet. That's just really sweet. But, wow, I think I thought it was going to be a lot easier. I really did.
Yeah.
So I knew that if I left the marriage, that my ministry would be over. And I was right. The
You're
day
right.
that I said, mm-hmm. I cannot endure mm-hmm. this another day, I was mm-hmm. dropped from my record label. I was just the world, my world of faith went silent. My community of faith went silent. And I just found this, my anger just was growing and growing. I still had some concerts on the book, so, you know, I did those. I mean, I didn't have any new requests, but I just found as each concert went on that my anger was just growing. And, you know, it took a lot of time, therapy, interaction, mm-hmm. self-reflection to realize this anger is not just at that man. This anger mm-hmm. is at this whole system, this whole oppressive, vertical, hierarchical system that the people in this country have come to call Christianity. And that's not what I signed up for. I signed up for the Jesus who said, in Christ, you know, there is no... there is no slave nor free, no male nor free, no, mm-hmm. you know, they're trying to say male nor female. We're all equal. I wonder, where is this equality? Why is there this submission thing? It wasn't just the submission of women under men, but all kinds of power plays in the name of God and using scripture. And I I walked out. I walked out the door of the church I was going to the day that the pastor stood up from the pulpit and publicly named a person and disfellowshipped them and said if anyone interacted with that person, they would be disfellowshipped. And it turned out that that person was the only one in the whole congregation who reached out to me to see if I was okay. So, you know, it's the same old thing of who's the Christian? You know, the one who says they are or the one who acts like they are? So,
so maybe,
the church.
Go ahead. Well, I'm saying maybe that's the revolution you're talking about. It's like, you know, I've been thinking of, you know, Tony Campolo has what he calls them red letter Christians, which would, it's a referral to, you know, the Bibles that have all the words of Jesus in red.
Yeah.
And, you know, what would happen if we all really absorbed the words of Jesus in the church? What kind of changes would happen? I think it would be significant. Don't you?
Well, I do, but you know that that's not going to happen because and Tony, I've heard Tony Campolo say this as well. If you're driving a BMW, you know, how can you call yourself a Christian when there are people, you know, starving in wherever? That that continues, the message keeps coming back of if you really are a follower of Jesus, then the way you're going to show it is by taking care of the widow, the orphan, visiting the prisoner, you know, so... And not just as, you know, not just on Thanksgiving and Christmas going down to the soup kitchen, but actively becoming involved in the community that we are living in and being Jesus.
That's the community you're talking about. Is that the community you're talking about?
That is
Pam?
The community I'm talking about. There are a couple of things that, one of the theologians, and I call her a theologian, that impacted me way back when. I mean, of course there was C.S. Lewis. Of course there was Francis Schaeffer. Of course there was George MacDonald and Tolkien. But Elizabeth O'Connor, are you familiar with her?
Oh, yeah.
She had a book called Search for Silence. And well, there's several pages that I've underlined some things here, but she says that what we are really lacking in the church, and, I mean, she wrote this, I don't know, 30 years ago, but it's true now, that what the church is lacking. First of all, we have no room for the maimed and the outcast, the thieves, the adulterers, the wretched, and the tormented. She says, we have oppressive organizations full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. And she says, what we lack is confession. And confession cannot come into a congregation that's taken the saint or the description of the kingdom man as the Christian ideal. That the Sermon on the Mount was not meant as a proclamation that this is what the church needs to be now. The Sermon on the Mount is a call to the journey of becoming. And I love that. And I'm going to throw in here, I'm going to read a little bit more from her. A more common response to this ideal is to conform to the ideal by representing all the negative qualities in oneself. Many of us are lost in this way. We develop an unreal personality, or what Jung has called a persona, we put on masks for others and finally come to believe in them ourselves, even to take pride in our false images. Another way that hundreds are choosing is to withdraw from the church altogether and to go in search of a community that will allow them to be fallible human beings on the pilgrimage of becoming whole. It reminds me of your song, Evangelical Veil Productions.
Yeah.
You know, that what happened, where did confession go? Where did transparency go? Where did confessing our needs to each other go? You know, church, and like I said, I dropped out of church way, way back when. So I didn't even know what was going on in the organized churches until recently, and have been amazed to find out they've become big box stores. You know, and that worship is don't even get me started on that, but it's, you can be impersonal, you can get lost in the worship rock concert and all the smoke and everything, but where is the community?
Yeah, and where is, like you say, where is the openness, and where is the confession, and where is the honesty and the unveiledness? You know, I don't, you know, I think, Pam, I honestly think it's always been this way. I think that, as a matter of fact, I personally believe that's why the Pharisees are such a big deal in the New Testament, because they will always be with us. Jesus knew we would have Pharisees at any time and place, because whenever there is religion, there will be Pharisees. And the Pharisees are basically the ones who have organized the religion into something that's doable, and doable and measurable, by which they can therefore set themselves apart from other people who are not doing it, and that's basically what we all turn religion and even Christianity into. It that's what it becomes, versus a place where we all come together at the feet of Christ, and we drop our veils and we confess our sins and we cry together and laugh together and experience God's grace together and can't believe that we get forgiven. And that's a rare thing, but that's the way the church is supposed to be everywhere. Don't you think?
Well, I do think, and it makes me think of what we were talking a little earlier about, like the Franciscan order, that they take a vow of poverty, they take a vow of celibacy, they take a vow of, I can't remember what the other one is, but they do not take a vow against pursuing power. And that is, it's taken me a really long, long time to be able to understand the dynamic. It is about that power. And the sense of power, no matter where we get it, you know, it is a drug, it is addictive, and we don't want to let go of it. So what is so dangerous about religious institutions is they can use their scriptures to justify, you know, holding on to that power and making you submit to it.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, I think with that, you know, I agree completely, and I think that just means even more that you and I as artists need to come from a place where we are human and that we bear our souls. And I think that's something you always did with your music. And I think that's something I've tried to do. I can do it a lot more in my writing, too. I try to, you know, I haven't ripped open myself completely here all the time. But what I try to do is be as honest as I can about my humanity. And because I find out that, lo and behold, everybody else feels the same way. And they're all struggling with the same things every time. And why? So isn't that a much better way to live?
Well, I don't know how to live any other way. I mean, I really don't. And it's been a detriment.
Yeah.
At times, when it really has.
Pam, excuse me, but I think we might have somebody on the phone. Is that Gunner? Do we have a caller? We'll get back to this, but I want to see if we have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got a caller here.
Pam, you'll be happy to hear this voice.
Can we put...
Hello?
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 Okay, who do we have here?
Am I on?
Yes,
you're on.
You are.
We got you.
Okay. Hi, I'm Dave Kelly. And
hi, Dave Kelly.
Hi. And,
your voice doesn't sound anything like I thought it would.
Your voice doesn't sound like I remember it. I only remember it singing.
Wow.
John and Marty are old friends of ours. And and I am glad to hear you talk, Pam, because I've been wanting to have some way of bringing Pam to the Northwest to do a concert, and her move back to California brought that within range, and I expressed that once. I've been stalking Pam for years on Facebook. And I said, how can we get you up for the concert Northwest? I am not an agent. I can't figure out how to her anything. And finally she says, how about a house concert? And knowing the size of our house, I thought, how about a yard concert? And so we're going to do it on August 16th. And if there are any other people who want to have Pam sing, house concerts are great.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to a couple of them myself, and they're really terrific.
They are.
Wow.
They're very intimate. They're very intimate, and they're feels like community, doesn't it, Dave?
Yeah, because it'll be in our yard. So I'm going to check out. I'll have to check out with the police department about certain things. And
invite
sure
them.
We don't disturb our neighbors. All our neighbors are invited. and so I've been really looking forward to this for a long time because I have to say one thing, John. The first Christian album I bought after I became a Christian in 1976 was Fly.
Uh-huh.
My second one was Still Life. And I have to say that I was biased a little, one heck of a lot cuter than you. Which has got more hair on top of her head than you have on the bottom of your face at the time.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my gosh. He looked like Aslan back then, didn't he?
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
Well, sometime, Dave, sometime we'll have to rope Marty and John in to come up there, and we'll come up together and do something.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt you for a second? I'm just bouncing in because Dave is my dearest friend, along with his wife, who is my soulmate, Patty. But Gunner, who is our producer, is actually looking for individuals that he might be able to put together in teams to go to churches, to home concerts, yard sale concerts, whatever it is. So we might, something might be moving even as you're speaking. Might be happening. Yeah, might be really happening. So Dan, and
very
Dan,
cool.
You know what? Dan, you're the one that's getting it going. David, thank you.
This all ties in to what one of the two things that I really wanted to talk about, and that is
there you go.
What both of them is, we're boomers. In general, we don't belong in the big box churches. We don't; they're not directed towards us. There's a movement of people our age finding community in smaller groups. And, you know, I really miss Nashville. I have to say that. I miss Nashville terribly.
Mm.
But somebody asked me today.
Tell us just a little bit about why you miss Nashville. I think many, many people, it's like the mega, mega entertainment capital of the world, and especially for musicians. And it's like glitter and rhinestones and everything, just beautiful. Tell us a little bit about Nashville.
Okay, I will talk about Nashville. I'm gonna finish my comparison first, and then I'll backtrack. I can finish my train of thought on the tail end of this. So, Nashville. I moved there almost 33 years ago, and I came at the invitation of a management company. When I got there, Nashville was just a little cow town. You know, it really was. There was no big deal about it. I mean, yeah, there was the country music scene, but most of the country artists didn't play anywhere in Nashville except for at Opryland or at the Ryman. So it was just a really low-key place, and it has just grown little by little by little by little until, I mean, it just gained critical mass, especially in the contemporary Christian world. Everything, you know, located, headquartered in Nashville. So, you know, there's this, well, if I'm going to be a part of it, I need to be there. And but it's, Marty, you might have to ask me some more specific questions about what you want to know about Nashville.
Well,
go ahead, John.
Well, I think Marty was just coming from the standpoint that the Nashville, you said that you miss it, and you were missing some sense of depth and community, which obviously you've experienced something that the rest of us don't know about, because our impression of Nashville would be the opposite of that. Is that right, honey?
Okay. Well, you have to realize that my connection with Nashville is not with the music community. My connection with Nashville is with the business community. Because after I lost my record deal, you know, I've done a jillion different things, but the main points, building blocks. I worked for 10 years with nonprofit agencies, both, you know, working directly with the homeless and battered women, and, you know, working at that level, and then in marketing and PR with nonprofits. And then I went to work for the Nashville Business Journal and became an advertising executive involved deeply with the Chamber of Commerce. And then I became the market publisher for a publication for doctors and healthcare providers. So the last 20 years for me have been out of the music industry. My friendships are based on business, and it's only been recently that I have in the last 3 years have I reconnected with my Christian friends. I hadn't gotten to that part, but I didn't want to have anything to do with Christians. I didn't want to have anything to do with the church. I didn't want to have anything to do with contemporary Christian music. I put all my records and my tapes in the closet and just said, that was then, this is now. And I'm shocked I'm having this interview with you. I mean, I'm shocked that I'm here. And God has used social media in a crazy way, and connecting with people like Dave, conversations. And when I started getting these emails from people like Dee Dee and Dave and saying, you know, how my records had impacted them, you have to realize it had been 25 years of silence. I didn't know, I didn't have any idea I had any impact on anybody. I thought I was totally forgotten. It just undid me. I thought, really? So Nashville, for me, is my, I lived in Hillsborough Village, which is right by Vanderbilt. It's my neighbors. It's all of that. And it's the beauty of the land. So that's what I say. And culturally, the museums and the theater, the independent films, culturally, there's a whole realm that has synergy that I haven't found here yet. You know, it's probably in San Francisco, but I haven't found it yet. So that's what I miss. But when somebody asked me today, are you going to move back to Nashville? I said, I don't think so, because I can make a few phone calls to someone like Dave Kelly or someone who makes a comment on my Facebook and says, and I could say, I'd really love to come to your town, so why don't you invite some people over and I'll be there. I can't do that in Nashville. I can't do that in Nashville because there are a jillion people there wanting to do what I'm doing. And I don't have to have a record label. I don't have to have any big promotion. All I have to do is build community.
That's great. Pam, do you see an increase? Do you see an increase in these kinds of opportunities for you?
Yeah, I do.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I just did one of these up in Reno, and, and I think Jackie Turner was a Facebook fan and an old-time fan of my records, and she did exactly what Dave did. Let me know when you're going to be in the area sometime. And I said, well, why don't you just invite a few people? I'll come. So their church invited me, and I had no idea what to expect. And you have to realize that I haven't sung in many churches. I mean, it's just, it's a new thing. And well, I want to tell you about the first church concert I did after not doing one in 25 years. But with this one, I rode the train up from Sacramento to Reno, and that was awesome. It was like going through Narnia into the wild, wild west. And do you remember a guy named Dan Whittemore?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, Dan goes to this little teeny tiny church, and so I asked him to do some songs before I did my concert, and he did. And before the concert, we had dinner with the pastor and his wife and a couple of other couples, and it turns out that they, too, have been disenfranchised from the mainline churches, from the parachurch ministries that they have given their lives to, and that they, too, are seeking to find a community of faith. And when I say community of faith, I'm talking about what you were talking about, John, of being Jesus to each other and being real with our warts and all, and getting supporting each other on the journey. So I am finding, especially people in our age bracket, I thought I was probably in the minority, but I have found in the last couple of years that there has been a huge migration of people like us who were involved in the Jesus movement who have left because they weren't finding that transparency, weren't finding that community. So I think that there's a huge need for you, John. It's easy for me to say huge need for you. I'm amazed that there could be a need for me, but
there is, and
apparently, I told you earlier, I keep the song that you wrote. I'm a pot. I'm a vessel. I'm a pot. I'm a vessel.
I'm a vessel.
Yeah, hold something special.
Something special.
I got the living love
of Christ inside.
Well, I'm just a broken pot. The paint's worn off. It's cracked. It's chipped. And if that gets to the second thing that I want to talk about, I have the question goes over and over and over in my mind. Am I done?
I want to get to that. Pam, set that aside. I want to get to that.
Okay.
That's our last thing because we're going to be running out of time pretty soon here. But before we leave this whole concert thing, I want, because we got people listening here who I think might love to be able to invite you to come to their if they wanted to have you do a concert, how would they find you? What's the easiest way to find you?
Just email me, or if they're on my Facebook, they can just message me.
Okay.
My Facebook is facebook.com/PamMarkHall, and my email is PamMarkHall@me.com.
Me.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Fantastic, because I'm sure there are people here that want, and I've heard that this is really a growing thing, and I think it's good for people. I think you're right. I think it's really good for people like us, because, Pam, you don't know how many people there are out there, and you told last time we were together how you were amazed at the emails you got, Facebook comments, the tweets, all this kind of thing, from people you have known nothing about. And they're out there, and people have been touched deeply and would give anything to be able to spend an evening with you and your guitar and just get to know you. And it's a great setting, I think. I didn't know you already had this set up with Dave. I thought you guys were talking about, but it's already set up, right? August 16, is that what he said?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, anybody within range of Seattle, that's August 16, remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to put in a plug for that, because I think I think this is going to be a great thing. And but I love that this idea that you told me you had an idea for a book, and I am very intrigued by this. So
okay.
Tell us a little about this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was sitting and having lunch with my pastor, Josh Lichter, and I want to mention the church. It's a little Anglican plant of about 25 people, and it's called Incarnation in Roseville. And he set up a lunch for me with Bob Carlyle, the guy that wrote, "In my life, Lord, be glorified." And I'm telling Bob my story. and, you know, about everything I've told you so far. And I just said, so I'm just going to say it. I'm 62 years old, Bob. You know, am I done? I know I've done some wonderful things. I mean, when I say wonderful, I know that I've done things that, I don't mean success things, but things that I feel like that was kingdom work. That was, that made a difference. And I think, all right, so my voice crackles and I can't sing those high songs anymore. But I've lived a life, and for some reason, I'm back in seeking community of faith. And
great.
So, but am I done? I mean, is there something else for me to do? And not only that, but this is real life. This is real life, and which means, you know, I lost my job during the recession. I'm like half the Americans, other Americans who lost their jobs and lived off of their retirement and savings, and I'm on a financial edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being transparent here, not because I need to be, but because I have come to realize that there are so many people in the same place, in the same age bracket, saying, I've got a third of my life left to live. What am I going? What can I do? How can I finance what I want to do? You know, so I want to start the conversation of
great.
Not just am I done, but are we done? You know, what's left for us to do? So I said that, and Bob said, that's a book right there. You got to write that book. And so he set me up with an agent, and we talked about it. And so I'm just taking baby steps, but here's what I desire, which is I want to hear other people's stories about, you know, bullet points of this is what I've done in my life. Those first two-thirds of my life, I've got a third left, and here's how I'm transitioning, or here's what I hope to do. And I would like to request your listeners to send me their stories, because I would like to incorporate them into this book that I'm writing.
Fantastic. Wow. Fantastic. And that whole concept is, am I done?
Am I done?
Am I done yet? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, am I done yet? What's left, God? Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear that. I would love
the song. Well, let's write it. Okay. So I would like people to write to me, to send me their stories, you know, past, present, and future, and send them to me at that same email address, pammarkhaw@me.com.
All right.
I'm willing to send you my story, Pam, as long as you're willing to say that you're not done yet.
I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet.
I knew that.
And you know what? I'm having to say that by faith, and I bet that the rest of us are too, right?
You know, Pam, I think if anybody could describe anything about you, it would be that everything you've done is not been the easy way. It's been by faith. You have to be encouraged by that, but at the same time, all of us have to recognize how hard it's been to do this.
Thank you, Marty.
Hi, I know, I'm sorry. I just had a 14-year-old show up and request something. So I'm sorry I broke the magic.
Oh, I thought you were crying your eyes out, Marty.
Let's go back to the beginning when you were talking about the songs. I was crying my eyes out with Dee and I were actually talking about some of the songs that you were doing. Just in my mind, and you know I can't sing worth anything. In my mind, I could hear the words and hear you singing, and I was in complete tears. So I think probably the entire interview, I have been in tears. So I am.
You are the Lord, you are the Christ.
Oh, who do you say I am?
You are the Holy Messiah. That's one of Marty's favorites.
Oh, Pam,
it's a pretty powerful song.
Oh, my God, every single song. I am not, this is my song when things are not going the way I think they should go. And I'm really not really happy about anything. And so I begin your song with, you are the Lord, you are the Christ. Okay, all right, you are the Christ.
All right, so you are.
And after a while, and it's in a worshipable place after that, but the process is not getting there. But no, it's one of my favorite songs.
I love that. I love that, and I know we're running out of time, but I didn't get to talk about my song, Angry Woman.
Yes.
It's a song that I wrote about the whole anger thing at the misogyny that I experienced in the church, and a couple of years ago, this pastor invited me to come to his church and tell my story, and he wanted me to sing Angry Woman. I said, are you crazy? His name's Bert Montgomery. Bert, you're crazy. And he said, yes, I am, but I still want you to come. So I went and told my story about how I'd been wounded and how I'd been angry, and then how God brought me through that to a place of forgiveness, forgiving those who wounded me. And forgiving myself, because that ultimately it comes back to, let's look at your part in this. It always comes around to that, doesn't it? Let's look at your part in this. But people came up to me afterwards, these big burly guys with tattoos and piercings, saying, thank you for getting me in touch with my inner angry woman. I can't believe this. I mean, I wrote that song 25 years ago and just put it away because I thought it was too threatening to anyone. But when we're hurt, we get angry. And that's one thing that I have experienced, that God is not afraid of my anger. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, God's angry at some of the same stuff I am.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of that process, it always has to come to forgiveness. So give us this day our daily bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. So, and that is the piece, that's one of the pieces that is missing in, I can't be the judge of it, but from my evaluation, that a lot of what is missing. We don't have a way to work through our hurts because we don't come to a place of being authentic about this is what happened, this and how it hurt me, and this I forgive you. Now let's move on.
Wow. So true.
The song that you guys are both there's so many songs that you both are so well known for, but the one that comes to my mind is When We All Come Together, that you wrote, Pam. Do you remember it?
Uh-huh.
Would you and John be willing to sing it?
Oh, sure. John, you want to sing it?
Sure.
When we all come together
in the beauty,
of the Lord,
we can feel His Holy Spirit drawing nigh.
Yes, we hear His Spirit calling each one by His name to a holy life He's promised to sustain. Damn, you forgot.
Getting a little bit of delay here.
Talk about closing in prayer. That was beautiful. That was beautiful.
And we can worship and adore him because
he's removed
our shame and boldly draw before his throne of grace
with joy.
Yeah. There you go.
And that's the most important part right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it
isn't
is.
It though?
Yeah, all you're saying is that we got to have a place for the shame. We got to have a place to face it and to bring it out and to go through that process. And you don't get that joy if you don't get that. You can't get through to that. You don't get the grace if you don't have the pain. And it's just the way it works. And
again, Elizabeth O'Connor says, we have to be real. You know, you have to be authentically human in order to really participate.
Yeah.
In community.
Pam,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done. I'm done. One last thing, because I think this is a great place to stop, and our time is pretty much run out. Just want to thank you so much. It's been a really wonderful conversation. It's just been like, you know, we've just been chatting like old friends, and I hope that I hope that many others will enjoy this and tell your friends you can pick up on this if you missed it. Tell them to come back to Blog Talk Radio /The Catch, and you can hear it anytime you want to. That's what's great about all of our shows. So thank you, Pam. And
thank you, John and Marty.
It's been like having a glass of wine with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm enough of a pagan that I can say that. Honestly, it was so intimate, so honest, so raw. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. I love you guys.
And I love you too.
I love you too.
Thank you. Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Pam. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Love you.
Okay. Oh, Gunner?
I'm hearing her breath.
Are you there?
Like he had one more thing yet to say. God, how is that, John? Gunner's coming in.
I'm here. Wow. Wow.
There you go. We got the dog back.
Absolutely.
Well, I think
absolutely.
That was I love the reality of that, and we got into some real stuff, and I just appreciate so much Pam opening her heart to us, and I hope that we were encouraged. I know I was, and I know that I want to tell everybody that I'm not done.
Yes.
And I'm honestly, I don't think I'm even close to being done. And
Pam Marcall certainly is not. I'll tell you something. Anytime I've ever been with her since 1975 is when I met her. I'm into this moment and in between. There's never been a time that she hasn't been completely and utterly honest and vulnerable to the point where many times you're kind of uncomfortable and you want to go, well, let's move on to
Yeah, what do we do now? Uh-huh.
And she is so honest with her reality that it hurts because she's so right in what she's saying, and we're so uncomfortable being uncomfortable. Her music, when any one of her songs, any one of them, is uncomfortable because it really hits the rawness of our own heart and makes us be submissive before the Lord out of her own pain.
Yeah. Well, that was something. Gunner, you have any words of wisdom as we close out tonight?
You know,
that is so cruel. That is so cruel, John. Come on, Gunner's got a man. Word for everything, and the poor man, how is he taught Sam Markov?
I will go anywhere you need me to go. No, you know, you said it all. I mean, I'm not done, and I just, what an absolute wonderful time to be comfortable, to be uncomfortable, you know, and I just, I really, really appreciated the raw honesty in that conversation of just just friends that have known each other, that have walked the journey and the, you know, the ups and downs of life. But to say I'm not done, you know, I mean, you know, what more is there to say, you know? And what a great to have Dave on up there in Seattle. And we got to get you guys.
That's amazing. It's pleasing to hear his voice. And he is is such a believer in Pam. He's actually undertaken this himself. His wife calls it a yard sale, meaning that their home isn't big enough to have Pam and those people that would want to be able to hear her sing and speak. But their yard is giant. It's huge area of property. And I just applaud Dave for stepping out, making this happen. Gunner, you know, you got to be thinking, you know, before the Lord right now that maybe there's something here that you've been praying about.
Well, you think about the last few shows, and we talk about Stonehill and some of the others, and then this conversation here to hear you guys singing,
Paul Clark.
Yeah, Paul Clark. There's something going on here, and I think today's theme plays right into it. We're not done yet, and the best is yet to come, and brighter days await here. And so we got some work to do. We got to get busy on that and get you guys out there.
But one more night that you have to tell your wife, I'm sorry, but I won't be able to sleep because my mind is going to be working too fast, too hard tonight. I know you, Gunner, so please tell your wife I'm so terribly, terribly sorry.
Which means I'll be getting like 15 emails. So
I know. I know. That's right.
I love it.
As usual, Gunner, you are the most amazing man in the world. We're so thankful to know you. And we are responsible for many, many nights that you don't sleep. For that, we're sorry. But then, again, no one that's listening right now could possibly be sorry because you are the reason for a lot of these things happening. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I believe in you guys so much and what you've done and what you're going to do even more so. And I'm excited and honored. And we're just keep on plugging away and being able to link arms with Pam and Randy and Bill Maloney and all the different people we've had on. And we'll just keep the train going. The train is on the tracks.
Oh. I know you're about ready to land the plane. I've got to say one thing that Pam did want to talk about. I only know this because I was eavesdropping on a conversation she was having with John, and that is, and so perhaps the listeners can tune in on this, you know, bring their vote in on this one. Pam wants very much to do a Christmas album with John and Paul Stuckey from Peter, Paul, and Mary. I would love to see a vote. By either going to the blog, you know, to John's through Facebook or to Twitter or his email. I'd love to hear some thumbs up for that and see whether or not we should be moving forward to that. And then, Gunner, you'd have to be the producer for it. There we are. One more night, actually.
Maybe we turn that Christmas album into a Kickstart project. That might be
Let's do a Kickstart project. Yeah, so we've got that going on, and then we've got to get John. I think one more shout out here for Pam's book. She's calling out the Catch community for stories, right? And they can get a hold of you through there. And so maybe one more plug on that. We'd love to get some stories to Pam.
That's right. Absolutely.
www.pamarall.com. You can get all of her albums. She's written six. She personally has done six albums. She is a Grammy nominee, I've lost my notes, but not only is she a Grammy nominee, but she is, her songs, two of them have gone golden. So, I mean, you know, there's not, go to www.pammarkhall.com, and I know her music is available there. If you have never heard her, you want to, and those of us that do love her, there's more than likely an album that you have not yet heard, so check it out.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Great time. What a great show. PamMarkHall.com. Go back and listen to this interview. Hey, we're going to be changing some things up here in a little bit. We're going to be coming out with some edited versions of some of these shows and some of the best of over the last 24 episodes now. So be looking for that. We've got the Catch coming out tomorrow morning, every day, 5 days a week. And check out those new videos that John posted tonight on the Magic Johnson interview on Anderson Cooper tonight with Donald Sterling. as well as John talking about the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls and Women of Vision. So, John, you got a lot of stuff you're up to. This is going to be fun. We got some great things to do.
I think so.
Yeah. Great things to accomplish. So, thanks, guys, for a great show.
Yes.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
And thank you, Jesus, for Gunnar's wife, who's willing to put up with all of this. Many a night, I just can't have time with him. Thank you.
There you go.
She's wonderful, and you guys are wonderful. Let's land the plane.
I just love the bass. We're about ready to land. Please put your seatbelts up.
I just love the bass line.
Yeah, I know.
You know? Who played bass on this record?
I don't remember who played. Johnny's Cafe. Yeah,
that's right.
Everything is extraordinary.
This is the Clark Craftsman upgrade arrangement that I talked about.
That's right. As a bass player, this is a fun song for me to listen to.
Bring this sound up. Good night, Gunnar.
Good night, guys. Love you guys.
Good night, Gunnar. Thank you.
Yes.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together.